Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Tuesday edition of the program. Feels like a Monday. Hopefully everybody had a great long weekend out there enjoying the weather and enjoying a Mariners team that's just on fire right now. We'll talk about it. Mike Blowers will join us at 3 o'clock, which, as we tell you every time, is always a fun conversation. I think we both look forward to that conversation every week, whether they're doing well, doing poorly. He's got great stories. He's got great insight. It's just fun talking baseball with him.
He gave us some bonus time today that was just, you know, kind of off the it wasn't off the record stuff, but we had stopped recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just fantastic. I could listen to him all day.
Yeah, he's very good at he's the opposite of some of the guys we talk about who try to make things sound much more complex than they are.
Yeah.
Or, you know, try to really spruce it up to make it sound like I really know what I'm talking about. You know, he knows what he's talking about. He played in the, like you, he played in the league long enough to where you just know that he knows. But he's got a way of speaking that makes it easier to understand.
Yeah. Well, he explains it. You know, yeah. And the other thing, you know, my brother always says this: if you want directions from someone, you want it in the least amount of words possible.
Thank you.
Don't want a bunch of what you call word salad.
Yep,
which I love. You said something about they're on fire, and I hope you enjoyed the weather.
Yeah,
Bob, you had both of those things. Bob over enjoyed the weather, and he's on fire.
I am on fire. I'm a nice shade of red right now. Dave's really enjoying it, and I'm very warm.
No, I am sympathetic, man. We were having a little exchange about you know, suntan lotion. It was very interesting. But no,
sunscreen.
I mean,
screen.
I just always put it on now. I think the last time I got burned like that was in Hawaii, and it was like a 10-day trip, and I was in pain for like 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, and ruined it. So, yeah. But I hope this was worth it for you.
Yeah, it was a good day. First time I've ever paddleboarded.
Yeah.
And I was telling our Mike Lefko, our producer, is a big paddleboarder. He goes out all the time, and this was the first time I'd ever done it. And I told him I stood up on the board, and I face planted about 6 seconds later. It was a little windy, and then was
yeah,
pretty much
planted in the water. Though.
In the water, yeah, it was fine. It was refreshing, but I was we totally forgot to bring sunscreen, and I was thinking, what is it? 72. It was kind of sunny, then cloudy. So it was. I was thinking, no big deal, and turns out I was wrong.
No,
I got cooked. I got cooked. So yeah, I'm a nice fiery shade of red. Is red pink? I don't know what you'd call it, but that's it.
Sounds like you enjoyed the weather, though, other than that.
Yeah, it was a good weekend, and hopefully everybody else had a great weekend, and I did enjoy watching the Mariners.
Oh, man.
I loved watching the Mariners. They're over 500. They're the worst-hitting team in baseball. They've had injury after injury after injury. I mean, it's just amazing what this team has gone up against, and I understand that they swept the Rangers, and they're a bad team. Rangers are not a good team, but you beating any team 4 times in a row, I don't care if they're last place, second place, third place, whatever. That is tough to do. And they did that, and then they took out the A's again in such an odd game in that you had mistakes made. You had 2 gaffes in the outfield, one from Kyle Lewis, one from Jared Kelnick. You had a balk that cost him a run. And you're just going, this.
How many times did you watch that balk? I ran it back several times, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing it. It was so subtle.
It was a shoulder move. I saw it. I don't think there was much. There was no real gripe about it. It was.
Yeah, everybody knew it was. But I mean, it just, you know, I'm just kind of casually watching, and all of a sudden the umpire comes running around the front. I'm like, well, wait, what's happening here? So everybody advances, and you know, Chargois knew it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He knew
even
it.
He didn't bark back
Service
or anything.
Knew
it was. Yeah. But how strange is it that this team consider? And by the way, there's another. Another injury. You saw it in the game last night. Kyle Lewis tweaked his knee, left the game after the 8th inning, and he is now on the 10-day IL. It's unbelievable. Taylor Trammell has been called back up.
Coming up, yeah.
Marco Gonzalez will get the start tonight. Who was the one they sent down? Robert Duggar, I think, is the one they sent down.
Mm-hmm.
But just the IL has been worn out by the Mariners. Absolutely worn out. You know, and it's interesting to watch what they've been. And I know there are a lot of Scott Service critics in our audience. That's fine. That's fair. That's what baseball does. There's a decision made basically every pitch you could question, but you got to give the guy some credit, even if you hate him. You have to give him some credit for holding a team together that is the worst hitting team in baseball, with little to no experience at just about every position, and uneven performances out of your starting rotation, and injuries like unlike anything you could have imagined. And here they are, one game over 500. Now, is that going to be who they are the whole season? I have no idea. This is, you know, there's still over 100 games to go. But to face what they've faced to this point and be where they are, I think you have to give them credit, and it is pretty darn impressive.
Well, and at least they're getting Marco back tonight. And then, you know, the other thing is Thursday night, and we talked about it Friday, obviously, Flexen had a good outing, right?
Of his career.
Yeah, and then Logan Gilbert, same thing. You know,
yeah, ends best up of his short career, of his four
very
starts.
Short career. But, yeah, he's trended up each and every time, and he's getting better. Remember last time against the A's, the big victory was that, you know, he was throwing his changeup, and now it's that, you know, he got pretty deep into the game. So, you know, that part of it is looking up. But, yeah, the injury thing, you know, Kyle Lewis, that's got to be really difficult when something, you know, that thing was screaming at him. But I don't know about you, it looked like he should have just taken one more step.
Are you talking the one where he tweaked his knee or the
Kyle
one where he
Lewis
committed the error?
Where he tweaked his knee.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, because that was the one where it went off the tip of his glove. Or it was
well, the
just
one that went off
top.
His glove, it was the error where he just took his eye off the ball.
Yeah.
He was getting ready to throw it to the infield before he had it.
Yeah. No, I was talking about the one where, you know, he injured himself and, you know, he just kind of got caught in between. It reminded me of that. Remember that Tedrick Thompson touchdown that he gave up where he jumped up in the air, he stops, he jumps, and he just timed it wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Lewis, I thought that was the degree of difficulty was much more for him. But, yeah, so now all of a sudden he goes down, and you could see him out there rubbing his knee. So it's just frustrating to see that
torn meniscus is what they're saying. Suffered a small meniscus tear.
Now, are they indicating whether surgery? I mean, sometimes you can go in, clip those things, and you can be good to go, but I don't know. You know, that's like Dwayne Brown, I think? I think didn't he go have a surgery like that and then was able to play a few weeks later in the playoff game at Green Bay in 2019, 2020? But, yeah, it's just frustrating. That part of it makes me actually angry that they've gone through this many injuries. But, you know, and you'll hear you were talking about what service is saying to these guys. We had this conversation, you'll hear it here at 3 o'clock with Mike Blowers about, and what Mike referenced was something you and I always talk about, you know, because he said, I hear you guys talking about it too with the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing practice. We're not seeing, you know, what the coaches are doing and how, you know, all the little movements and what the guy's mood is and what he says and things like that. And, you know, service, everything, watching guys walking through the clubhouse, you know, how their demeanor, are their shoulders slumped, things like that. And that conversation was kind of rotating around Tom Murphy and how he kind of realized that, you know, when he comes to the park, he needs to shake things off and stuff. And, you know, Mike saying basically that was probably a conversation that he had with Service. But my point is, I think Service has done a really good job. And, you know, I don't hear him complaining about the injuries a lot. He's just like, hey, this is what's happening. And it's really difficult, though, when you're trying to get done what they're doing, and it just keeps getting interrupted.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch. I mean, it's just when you think, okay, the wheels have fallen off, this is a free fall now. I mean, they couldn't have looked worse or less competitive than that Padres series, where you just, yeah, I came out of that one just going, ugh. You know what I mean? Losing's one thing. I expected it, right? I predicted a losing season. I'm not shocked when they lose. It's what happens. It's 162 game. But when you lose in that fashion, you're just going, okay. I don't know if they've just kind of quit this early or it just wasn't. They weren't even present. It was just an awful, awful series. And for them, now you fast forward just, you know, a couple series later, here they are over 500. And I understand, again, the Rangers are not a good team. But you take four from them. That's really hard to do. That is really hard to do. And then they take one from the A's again. They beat the A's in the series. They took two out of three from Oakland in Oakland, first place team in your division. So, you know, I'm going to enjoy it while it's happening. We'll see ultimately what they look like when they're said and done. But, man, that game was fun to watch yesterday. That was fun. The celebration was awesome.
Yeah.
And it told me how much these guys really like each other. They seem to genuinely like each other.
Yeah.
They're united. and they haven't lost con. They battled. They're resilient. I'll give them that. And here's the call on the Murphy walk-off sack fly.
Here's the 2-1 pitch coming to Murphy. Trevino deals. Swung on. Base hit. Make that a line drive. Deep right field. Plenty deep. Here comes France. He's steaming on the throw. Not in time. Mariners win it. 6-5. Tom Murphy being mobbed. He's trying to get away. He's the strongest guy going. They're surrounding him, and he looks like he's a bull in a china closet. They're pushing him and shoving him as they celebrate on the first baseline. The Murph comes through with a liner to right to win the ball game 6-5 in 10. Woo!
Yeah, Murphy looked like he was going to start throwing punches when he was in the middle of that thing.
He had his fist clenched.
It kind of looked like it, like he was ready. Come on! It was pretty funny. And then he did his crazy eyes thing, which was hilarious. But you just the joy and just you just saw what it meant to them and overcoming the balk, the errors, and everything else that went wrong for him in that game against a first place team. That's a fun game. That's a fun win. It was really cool to see in extra innings them come up with that.
This will be one that we'll remember at the end of the year. That was so much fun to watch. And, you know, I had it recorded, so I went back. But I actually, you know, came in right about the eighth inning when the balk happened and all that. I mean, and then, Bob, I fell for the – I was fast-forwarding, and I'm like, wait, how'd they get a guy in second? What I fell for it again.
Oh, stupid. Yeah, extra innings.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, it's going to be one of those that that goes down as one of the great games of the year. You know, Murphy – he kind of reminds me. We had a guy, Jeff Robinson, who ended up being a long snapper a few years ago for the Seahawks. They remember when all the long snappers got hurt? And they brought a guy in who, he was from Idaho, and he lives here in Seattle. Jeff does. His nickname is Salty because he was a rookie when I was in my seventh year in Denver. And he's super smart, intelligent guy, but sometimes he said things that made him sound like a veteran when he was really just a rookie.
So we started like a salty old man.
We started calling him Salty Old Veteran. So Salty was his nickname, but he was one of those guys and he had his rookie year in Denver. I think he had 6 sacks, but like when he got a sack and you went to high five him, like he was going to break your hand, you know, you're just like, oh, and then the other thing he would do on the sidelines is, you know, sometimes when you're describing what happened out on the field, you know, I'm like, yeah, the guy's holding me, he's grabbing me here, but I'll use my words.
Right.
Salty would be like, and then he grabs me, and then he shoves me, and then he hits me upside the helmet, and I'm like,
he's
doing it. Yeah, and I'm like, just use your words, Jeff. Use your words.
He grabbed me like this, and then he hit me like this.
But that kind of looked like Murphy, like he's maybe one of those guys that doesn't know his own strength. And I was like, he's going to knock somebody out.
Yeah, there was a hot minute, the hot second there where he looked like he's going to fire back. He's going to fire back on these guys. But it was in all sincerity, that was just really cool. Really cool to see you hearing the crowd go nuts and the celebration and just seeing how united these guys are. And they're going to need to be like that because the rest of the season, I would imagine, is going to be a lot like what we've seen. Really uneven. And we called it from the very beginning. That's what comes with inexperience and youth. And we're seeing it in individuals and veterans. But it's just a really up and down ride. The other thing I don't want to undersell is the reemergence of Ty France in the lineup and what an impact he has, not because he was the one that scored or he's had a hit in every game except for one since he's been back. He looks healthy. He said he's not 100% yet. I saw his post game interview, but he's close. But just seeing the value in his presence, and you need to lengthen that lineup, especially when you've got guys who are struggling, when you've got Kelnick hitting .118. Is your leadoff hitter. When you've got Kyle Seager really scuffling, he had the one good game against the Rangers, but outside of that, he's kind of face planted right now. He's just, what is he, .218 or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, so you've got young guys like Kelnick, you've got veterans like Seager who are really scuffling. So Ty France is coming back at exactly the right time. Kyle Lewis was starting to get it going. Now he's going to be out. Hopefully Taylor Trammell can carry up some of what he had at AAA, and Blowers has talked to us about the difference in talent, so I don't expect him to come up here and just start raking immediately, but if he can just be representative, if he can hit .250 and not strike out every other at-bat, that'd be a wild improvement. He was hitting, I think, .157 when he got sent down, .158, and struck out 41 times in 83 at-bats.
Yeah.
So if he can just be representative, don't be a liability up there. Don't be that automatic, you know, when they step up, you're going, well, here's an out. You know what I mean? It just, and it'll be very interesting. I'm rooting for that kid unlike any other. I mean, we both love him and want him to succeed. we'll see how much of that transfers from AAA to here. But he had nothing but success down there. So that's just mentally had to take a lot off his shoulders.
That's probably more interesting than seeing the first call-up, I think. You know, this is our first, bounce, a guy bouncing down to AAA and then coming back up. It's going to make it much more interesting to watch. Ty France, since he's been back, he's batting .345, two doubles, a couple of walks, six RBIs. So when he scored and turned towards Tom Murphy, who hit the sack fly, you can see the love for – you got to have a guy like Tom Murphy on your team because you can see the love for him. I mean, everybody that went running out there, like it couldn't have happened to a better guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ty France, I mean, he's obviously scoring the winning run, and you would think he would be, like, jumping up and down. Yeah, but no, his first thought was, I'm going to get out to Murphy and do whatever. So it's good having a guy like that on the team that, you know, for these young guys. And it started making me think, you know, at what point, and, you know, we'll talk to Blowers about this, do you say, hey, I want to keep Haniger on this team for the long term?
Like, don't trade Mitch Haniger.
Yeah.
I just want that clear. I don't want to trade him.
What game was it? Was it Friday or Saturday where he had a sliding opportunity and he didn't get it? And it was like, you expect him to make – he's made like four or five of those sliding catches, and he was just a little bit late on that one. Well, he wasn't late. It was just too far away. But, you know, he's done that. He's been a clutch hitter. It just – his steadiness, I mean
– he's your best all-around player.
Yeah.
He's your best – he's the closest to a five-tool player you have right now when we're talking about hitting for average, power, speed, defense, throwing ability. He's your guy. And you don't have certainties in that outfield. We have no idea what Kyle Lewis is ultimately going to be. Rookie of the year, great. It was in a 60-game season. He has yet to play a full 162 games, and now he's hurt again. Is that going to be – it's the same knee, by the way, that he had the surgery on. It's the same knee that gave him problems that put him on the IL to start the season. So I don't know if that's going to be a chronic thing. I don't know if it's just unlucky. We'll see a meniscus tear. Who knows how long he'll be out. So you don't have certainty in him. You don't have certainty in Kelnick. We don't know what he's going to be. I mean, he's got all the makings of being a stud. Right now, he is scuffling big time at the plate, and he's not been great defensively.
No.
He's had some miscues out there. So you don't have a sure thing out there. Trammell, we're rooting for him, but we don't know. And we're projecting Julio Rodriguez when he gets there. Well, we still don't know. The big league is a completely different level of play, certainly. So your only proven commodity as an outfielder is Mitch Haniger. So that's I'm on the do not trade Mitch Haniger.
Me too.
That's where I'm going to stay there. You need a veteran presence even with all these young guys. Keep Mitch Haniger on this team. Let's take two.
Well, not as good of news as, you know, Kyle Lewis getting hurt doesn't overweigh this, but the Mariners announced a couple hours ago that they're increasing capacity at T-Mobile, starting with the next homestand June 14th. So now total ballpark capacity up to just over 30,000. A lot of information, mariners.com/tickets has all the info, but getting closer to those full ballparks coming all the way back.
That's great. This weekend felt like a normal weekend. I went out with our old Coolheart, Danny O'Neill went out to lunch, and there's all these people everywhere, and, you know, all the people at the ballpark, all the people on the lake yesterday. It's starting to feel normal again. So that's, I know they're, you know, dividing things up, vaccinated versus non-vaccinated, and working numbers that way. I'm not entirely sure what the breakdown's going to be, but just the fact you're going to have the ability to have 30,000 people in there. And you hear the noise just to, you know, I don't know what the attendance was for yesterday. It wasn't 30, certainly. But just to hear that crowd go nuts at the end of that game, I think we got numb to it last year with the piped in sound and everything. And it's probably not that big a deal. And then now you hear it again. You're like, yeah, I think it is a big deal.
Yeah, it was 11,000, according to ESPN anyway. You think they'll get 30?
I think it'll probably depend on who they're playing and, you know, where they're at that particular moment, if they're scuffling or if they're on a win streak or what. They might. The weather's getting good, and depending on who the opponent is. Yeah.
13-5 in one-run games. Best mark in Major League Baseball. 5-0 in extra innings. So this team is clutch. They got the clutch gene, Bob. So anyway, yeah, they're fun to watch, and everybody, I think, is being patient. But you're right, just getting out there, just getting out to Edgar's or, you know, the bullpen out there in center field. It's really nice to feel normal and not see cardboard cutouts anymore.
Well, it is June 1st. This is a big day for NFL cap hits to be reduced. So, for instance, if Aaron Rodgers now is traded, the Packers only take a cap hit of $21 million, down from the $38 million it would have been pre-June 1st. So we might see some of these trades for guys like Rodgers and Julio Jones start to happen.
Yeah, this will be the interesting thing to watch and see, because this is the target date for a lot of people that were analyzing, you know, where's this guy going to go? Is he going to stay with this team? Is he going to get traded? And everybody right. pointed to June 1st being the that line, like, okay, after that, it's a lot less punitive, financially speaking, for these teams. If they're going to make a deal, that's when it's going to happen. Now, does it mean it happens on June 1st, June, are they right out of the gate, or is there still going to be some lag time? It's going to be fascinating to see, though, how much movement there actually is.
Yeah, Mike and I were talking about maybe later on in the week getting Michael Jannetty from SpotTrack back here, but we'll talk to the professor at 4 o'clock, and he has his databases all ready to go for stuff like this. But, yeah, we've talked about, like, restructures. You know, Bobby Wagner has been, you know, talked about. And so, and then, you know, the Aaron Rodgers, only $21 million, the cap hit. But
well, I mean, it feels nice compared to 38.
Compared to 38, yeah, not bad.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, he is more than just a slightly terrifying face. We'll get deeper into what Tom Murphy's leadership has brought to this Mariners team. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mike Blowers will join us on the program. Make sure you stay tuned for that conversation. Always, we could have gone an hour with him easily.
Yeah, we could have our own podcast.
We could. He might get sick of the questions, but, I mean, he's just really good with his stories. And
he likes my questions.
Dave keeps track. He keeps a scorecard of any time a guest says, that's a good question, or that's interesting question, or whatever the compliment is.
And I pull a muscle reaching around to pat myself on the back.
And then he pulls the other muscle when he writes down the scorecard and holds it up to me that says, Dave 1, Bob 0.
No, you beat me the other day. It was we had John Paul Morosi on.
Who, in all honesty, the nicest person in the world, says it after just about every question we ask. We could say, how's your day? You know, that's a great question, guys. Yeah. I'm having a great day. You know, he's just that nice. He's just such a solid dude. But anyway.
I'll show you the logbook later, Bob. I've been keeping ever since we've been doing radio together.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, he's just so, you know, and he explains things so simply, which is, to me, that's genius. I mean, you know, if you can make something... Baseball can be pretty complicated. There's lots of little things, you know, like, you know, I'm still learning, you know, the balk thing. I mean, it really, I just didn't have an eye for that, you know. And then same thing like with Chargois, you know, where they made the big joke. Well, you know, pitchers are put away in glass and they're not supposed to do anything but pitch, right?
Yep.
And so there's all these little, you know, nuances and things with baseball, which Mike explains really well.
Well, and it's just amazing how approaches change within an at-bat based on the count.
Yeah, they're talking about 1-2 versus
1-0, 1-2, 2-0, 2-1, 1-2. They're changing what they're trying to do. They're changing their swing. They're changing, right. And we asked him, this is after we got done recording, about a comment he made on the broadcast where he talked about Lou Piniella pulling him aside saying, listen, when you get this count, when it's 1-0, 2-0, and there's nobody on or there's a runner on first, I need you to take chances. I need you to be more aggressive and do damage instead of trying to punch the ball to right field, not come up with a hit. I want you to drive it or hit it out of the park. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about Lou basically telling him, your average is going to go down, you're going to strike out more, but your production is going to be worth it. And when I heard that, I'm going, that's sabermetrics.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about these days, where they've devalued the strikeout, and just in lieu of, hey, the production will be there. The average doesn't matter. The strikeouts don't matter. It's about what you're producing. And to hear that Lou said that to him back in the mid-90s, you know, and now it's just such a prominent belief as far as sabermetricians go and everybody that's into the analytics, I thought it was really interesting. He had a long explanation about that and talking about learning just by sitting next to Lou when he couldn't play multiple days in a row because of a bad knee. And
yeah, was that when he told us that he said he'd wished he'd done that earlier in his career?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't get that on tape, but, you know, he was talking about how just listening to the process that, you know, Lou would be talking about things in the second inning that were going to happen in the seventh inning. know, and with pitchers and things like that. So, yeah, it's there's just a lot that goes into it. And but you're right, yeah, early sabermetrics from Lou. You wouldn't think that, you wouldn't think sabermetrics and Lou.
Yeah, it's just those are cool stories to hear. Really cool to hear. Talking about leadership and advice and things like that, Tom Murphy, having him, first of all, back and healthy is great. You need him to start heating up at the plate. And we talked about the interview he did post-game where he had talked about, listen, I was struggling big time and I was bringing it to the park and I had to change my way of thinking and, you know, how do I help everybody else? Yeah, I'm struggling, but I can't, you know, bring that negativity in here. And he's been very helpful with the pitching staff, especially young guys. When he's back there, having that experience back there, and Logan Gilbert, who had his best start of his four, certainly goes six innings, gives up two runs on five hits, five strikeouts, looked really good, much, much more promising. He felt great after that, and he gave Tom Murphy a lot of credit.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's his thing. I try to stay out of the way. He's an awesome guy. He scares me sometimes. I don't know, but he's cool, and just having that presence around, he's really helped me and kind of helped me learn the ropes a little bit quicker. So it's cool to see him excited and have a big moment like that.
I think they're asking about his crazy face. And he scares him. And here's Tom Murphy talking about, you know, just the guys are having fun with his crazy face.
I think we can all agree. I take this game pretty seriously, and I'm a pretty serious person most of the time. So this is kind of my over-exaggeration of my smile face. So the guys are loving it right now. You know, it gets a good laugh, keeps things light. So I don't roll with it until it kind of wears out, wears itself out. But yeah, everybody loves it and they anticipate it now. So it's good clubhouse morale for sure.
I think Groz was calling it his walking dead face this morning with Gallant, and maybe it was Paul that said that. But yeah, it's funny because I didn't really know what it was about, but it's that people were giving him a hard time about being too serious.
Yeah,
okay.
He doesn't smile.
You want something? All right, here it comes. And
on 12.
Yeah. Yeah, but just everything you hear, the more we start to hear, I would say, you know, about Tom Murphy, the more you realize how much he means to the rest of that team, and you know, and really want him to have success because you know he's kind of one of the spiritual leaders. I mean, we don't see it from Haniger just because Haniger's very, you know, dry and plain, and you know, he's same
quiet.
Approach, very quiet. Have we heard him in the media? I'm not sure.
Not very often. We haven't spoken to him. He's not a guy who does a ton. I've requested because he's a massive MMA fan, so we need to get that conversation going. But
anyway, however we can get him on, you guys can talk MMA the whole time.
We'll have him on the podcast, and these guys love when you talk to them about something other than their job.
Right.
We learned that with all the Seahawks. You start asking them football questions, and they kind of put the wall up and go into robot mode.
Yeah.
But you talk to them about what they did in their vacation or what movies they watch or whatever, then they – all of a sudden, they're laughing and they're light, so maybe that'll be the key with him.
Yeah, but I mean, he's obviously one of the leaders, and then Kyle Seager has his own way, you know, of all the talking that he does, and he making jokes. But, you know, it sounds like Murph will call guys out, you know, in the locker room, and sorry, in the clubhouse. And, you know, we heard Service allude to that. That, yeah, he's kind of a guy. Do we have a clip on that?
Yeah, here's Service just talking about his presence in that clubhouse.
I don't know if that one's been named yet. Unfortunately, you guys don't get, you know, if Murph does have a rough at bat, he does go a little crazy once in a while down in the tunnel. And I think that's his happy face, if there is one for Murph. He's as intense as they come. Our guys love him. And the thing about Murph, too, is, you know, He is one of those guys with a louder voice in our clubhouse. He will say the crazy things. He will, you know, call somebody out, say a lot of things in jest. And in the clubhouse, there's a lot of truth said in jest. So he's one of those guys. It's nice to see him come through in that spot. Obviously, off to a rough start early in the year, but he's really picked it up here the last couple of weeks.
Love down in the tunnel, which means he's beating the daylights out of the bat racks and things in there. Things are getting smashed.
We heard that about Zunino, too.
Yeah, I think a lot of players would go in there and just have their way with a bat rack or something.
The only thing I worry about is, you know, and I would worry about if it was me, just don't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Don't hurt your, you know, something comes flying back and hits you in the head.
Don't punch anything.
Yeah. No punching.
Yeah.
No punching. Who was it that, you know, we had a pitcher on a couple of years ago that did something. Was it Hunter
Strickland?
Wasn't he with the...
I'm trying. There have been many, like Tim Belcher did it years and years ago, you know, supposedly ripped a urinal off the wall or something like that. Or, it's not a unique thing to go outside of the cameras and go in there and just unburden yourself.
Yeah. I remember we had a linebacker at Stanford that ripped a sink off a wall. He was just this big baby Huey guy, really strong, just ripped it off. But well, then the other thing I thought was interesting real quick before we go to break is that, you know, he said there's a lot of truth that gets said in jest.
Yep.
And so, you know, sometimes that's how you approach maybe a sticky subject with a little bit of humor, and it sounds like Tom gets that done.
Well, and it sounds like he understands Seattle and being passive-aggressive too. So that's some of that. Just kidding, buddy, huh? We heard that from people before. Coming up, are the Seahawks really a contender in the chase for Julio Jones? That story broke over the weekend. We'll talk about it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We're talking Mariner baseball with Mike Blowers coming up at the top of the hour. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, one of the big stories that broke over the weekend, the Seahawks reportedly had conversations with the Atlanta Falcons about the acquisition of Julio Jones. And then to further that, Russell Wilson and Julio have apparently talked to each other about playing together. And I read this with, on some level, there was excitement like, wow, Julio Jones, what would that be like with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lock in the Seahawks uniform? That'd be great. But then the other half, you're going, well, is receiver your biggest need? And how would they even make that work? They don't have a first-round pick next year. Reportedly, the Falcons already have a first-round offer on the table. Just going with reports. I don't know if it's true or what. But they don't have one till the following year. Maybe they put together a package. And then you have to deal with his salary, which they are financially not in a position to deal with. So they'd have to work some salary cap magic, and I'm sure they could do it. Every team seems to find a way when it looks like, well, they've got no money. These teams seem to find it, whether it's restructuring Bobby and Russell or, you know, maybe more player. I don't know how they go about doing it. And Bob Condotta wrote a good piece on it, sort of just detailing how involved that would possibly be. But let me ask you just the surface question, not the practical part of it in terms of finances, Dave, but is this what they need? I mean, I love the idea. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the great receivers in the league. But if they're going to make a huge move like this, which they've done before, we can go Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham and Jadeveon Clowney and Dwayne Brown and even Sheldon Richardson at the time was a decent name they brought. Just surprise moves you weren't anticipating. So they've got a long history of it. Is this realistic to you?
No. It's not at all. I mean, look at the targets. I mean, you're 136 in his best year. A couple of years ago, 100. 3 years ago, 113 targets. I mean, they've been in the triple digits for, you know, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett over the last, you know, 3 years. So, or 2 years. So, yeah, I don't. That doesn't make any sense to me. The other thing is Atlanta still is holding firm, from what I understand, with their request for a first-round draft choice. So, yeah, no, you don't need that. And then, you know, the other thing is the big fear about him going to San Francisco. But it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo throwing him the ball for a while. The other thing is this is what is going to be his 11th or 12th year coming up. So, I mean, he didn't play in a couple of years ago?
I think he only played 9 games.
He played 9 games last year. A couple of years ago, he played 15. So, I mean, he's had a good run. Look, I'll say this. Julio Jones is the guy that I think of. You know, when we talk about corners and how difficult it is for corners, what a tough job they have, because they're going up against some of the most awesome athletes in the world. And it's true. And as far as, like, we saw DK Metcalf actually almost qualify. I mean, almost. He was, what, 15th out of 17 or whatever. But still, he was running with those guys. And he's a football player. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, look at Julio Jones, 6'3", 220 pounds. I don't know if he has that kind of speed anymore, but he's ridiculous. But they just don't need him. I think the only reason the Seahawks are mentioned in this is that they're in on everything. You know, every time they'll open – you know, their door's open for looking at least evaluating and, you know, musing over whether or not it's even a possibility. They're always going to say yes. So it, to me, that's the where this comes from. It's not from anything practical, in my opinion. But, you know how they are. I mean, I say that, and 2 days later, they'll sign Julio Jones, right?
They've done it a number of times, as unrealistic as it sounds and unexpected, right? I mean, did we expect any of those moves I talked to? There was no whispers of Harvin or Graham or Jadeveon Clowney or, you know, Dwayne Brown.
There was a little bit of Jamal Adams.
Jamal Adams is the one I left out. Yeah, that's a huge one, obviously. Yeah. And then even Sheldon Richardson was a decent name at the time, and you just thought, oh, wow, okay. I mean, so they've done this a number of times. So the idea of making a move that would seem stunning is not foreign to them or any Seahawks fan, for that matter. So I guess if they did it, you couldn't be that stunned. But it just seems like there's a lot in the way of making it happen when you start really looking at, you know, what are you going to give up? How do you make the salary work? You know, do you restructure deals? Does somebody get cut? How does he fit in the scheme? You just spent your first pick overall this year on a receiver. What does that mean for Eskridge, Freddie Swain, anybody else that's on the – it just doesn't feel like the most pressing need. But the fan in me, I guess the person who would be playing fantasy football would be like, are you kidding me? How would you not want Julio Jones on your team?
Yeah, can you imagine lining up against those two guys? Let's say, you know, they get an 11 personnel with three wide receivers, and the slot guy's Tyler Lockett, who is probably – I mean, he's probably faster than Julio Jones. Although Tyler Lockett, you know, says, hey, look, there's one thing about a 40 time, and then there's another racing somebody. And that's why where Tyler Lockett doesn't seem that fast, but he's always gets separation, always gets separation away from defensive backs all over the league. So, but, you know, I mean, what about the target situation? What are you going to take, you know, 30, 40 targets away from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett?
I don't know. I don't know how that works. And they've talked about wanting to, you know, sort of recommit to the run on some level, right? And now what that balance is, run to pass, I don't know. But you re-signed Chris Carson. You just invested in that running back. So I don't know. It's just it's a really interesting possibility. I don't know how realistic it is. I would certainly, if you were asking me to bet, does it happen, does it not, I'd say no. No, it's not going to happen. But they've done that a bunch of times before where you'd probably make the same bet. So I don't know. I don't know, and I think I saw a mix of opinions on Twitter over the weekend. Some people really excited about the possibility, others saying, are you kidding me? Why would you, if you're going to make that kind of investment, why wouldn't you do it on the defensive side of the ball? They were the biggest problem last year. I mean, both sides were problematic at different times. So, but, you know, arguing that the defense, you know, go for Stephon Gilmore. Why don't you go for him if you're going to make a big investment? Which, okay. Cornerback's certainly a bigger need or a bigger question mark at this point. There is no certainty to that position, as we've talked about repeatedly. But it's just interesting to see the mix of reaction of, oh my God, how great would that be, to what are they thinking? He's 32, he's coming off injuries, he's not getting better, and you're going to mortgage the future even more. The one thing that would be made clear, if it's not already clear, that would be a emphatic win now move. That's not about the future. That's not let's build around Julio Jones. He's 32. That's about we're going for it. And they're already doing that to an extent when you bring in Jamal Adams and sacrifice the draft capital they did and everything they've done with Russell and re-signing Carson. It's about now.
But the thing I like is that they do trade away picks for proven football players, NFL football players. I'll always be okay with that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I don't know. Maybe Atlanta softens on their first round. You know, that's what they want for him. But somebody texted in and said, if they do sign him, do you think he'll show up to the OTAs?
You really want to talk OTAs, huh?
206. Yeah, good one. But, I don't – where would you spend it? I guess I would go maybe offensive line. I mean, if you're going to make a big move and you could get a center and who's, you know, on – par with, I mean, Alex Mack was in Atlanta and he ended up signing in San Francisco, and he's a guy that's in his 13th, 14th year, I think. So I don't know. To me, that's maybe center is the number one position. We'll see with Posick, and I'm not counting Ethan Posick out. I still think that he, you know, maybe things at the end were, maybe he was suffering from that offense as much as everybody else was, that it just wasn't working for him. I said this a number of times. There was a few blocks I saw him miss, and I'm like, why did they expect him to have to block that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Aaron Donald and he's two gaps away, it's hard enough to block him when he's head up on you. So, but yeah, I mean, if you're going to make a huge splash like this, give up a first rounder in the future, I would think it would be a center.
All right, we're going to talk some baseball with Mike Blowers. We taped this earlier, and one of the things I asked him in this interview was about, it's time to move Jared Kelnick down in the lineup. We got to do this, right? And we got into, you know, hey, Scott knows these guys better, blah, blah, blah. Well, the move's been made. The lineup's out for today. Kelnick's hitting sixth.
They were listening to you, Bob.
Yeah, they heard my pleas.
Exactly.
He's 21. I don't care how confident he is. He is sinking right now. Oh, for his last 22. Get him out of that spot. So they did. Crawford will be leading off today, followed by Haniger, Seager, France, Fraley, Kelnick, Trammell, Murphy, and Walton. So there's your lineup going into today's
game.
Good to
see Taylor Trammell tonight.
Yeah, Taylor Trammell. Marco's back. Yep. Get three or four innings out of him, stretch him out, so it'll be good. But we'll talk baseball. The conversation with Mike Blowers coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.